if you read 50 Shades of Grey?
No, I have not.
What? You're missing out.
Am I?
Yeah, you should know. It's a cultural phenomenon. Mm. It's so much of a phenomenon that it's in this, what I like to call the cold shower open.
Oh, that's good. I had spicy open in my notes, but cold shower open is even better.
Because it is actually a cold open. We don't know when this is happening, but yeah, Phyllis is listening to 50 Shades of Grey audiobook at work.
Phyllis has gotten into audiobooks, and lately she's been listening to 50 Shades of Grey, which, if you don't know what it is, it's a book about a...
it's like, porn.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's really into it.
Maybe that's where you should listen for the first time. You should also get an audiobook and listen at work. Super appropriate.
I got so many things to do. Who's going to do all the who's going to do all the work if I'm just on my couch moaning into my headphones?
Who's going to dump a bucket of water on your head?
That's true.
Before we get too far, we are talking about the episode Promos, which is season 9, episode 18, originally airing on April 4th, 2013. I noticed, Stephen, that these episodes are airing kind of like far apart from each other. I mean, the last one was in March, and the one before that was in February. It's like we're getting an episode a month here.
Hmm. I wonder what happened.
Yeah, I know. I can't think of anything. We passed the writer's strike. That already happened. Sure. But for some reason, this season is just like being really extended.
Hmm. Trying to keep it. Keep the party going, you know?
So yeah, Phyllis is trying to keep the party going. That's basically, we already talked about most of the cold open. There's really not much more to that besides everyone complaining that Phyllis is listening to a dirty book on her headphones. And Andy takes away her iPod, tells her she can't listen anymore, and then he is listening to it.
Yep. And so. Both Phyllis and Andy get cold water dumped on them to take him out of it.
You are no longer horny.
Es muy caliente.
Okay, you are useless. I'll take care of this.
What the hell?
It's okay, guys. She's no longer horny.
Excuse me, dirty birdie.
What?
You can have this back at the end of the day.
I like this cold open. I thought it was fun. I thought it was cultural. I thought it was funny. Quick little thing. It was nice. I liked it.
Yeah, I like that Andy calls Phyllis dirty birdie. That made me laugh.
So the main part of this episode, we have kind of three plots, I guess. The Daryl Jim plot back in Philly is just kind of, it's really weak. It's just kind of a touchstone to make sure that we're keeping track of our Philly bros over there. And mostly it is about Dwight's new love interest, Esther, coming to the office. And it's also about the promo being aired and everyone getting to see it.
Yeah, it's a big episode. A lot of stuff going on. And we are getting closer and closer to this television show that we've been watching get filmed make it out. We learned it's going to be 9 episodes coming up in May. And the station is like the local, like, public TV station in the Scranton area. And people are excited, but also kind of freaked out because there's a lot of stuff in these promos that they didn't realize was filmed.
Hey, what's going on? Who? Did Gangnam Style put out a new song?
There's a promo for the documentary on the web.
Play it again.
The boss.
Oh, hey!
That's Michael.
The workers. The lives. The loves. The people. The paper. The Office, an American workplace. Coming soon on WBIA.
Whoa. You go to the bathroom for 45 minutes and everything changes.
Yeah, they all gather around to watch the promo together on Oscar's computer, which is super nice. I love the moment where Nelly doesn't know who Michael is. I think that that's really funny that they put that in there. And they all see that there is a lot of secret footage that went out, and therefore a lot of secrets that are revealed, and everyone's really nervous about it, like you said. So that's kind of the catalyst for most of our episode, is everyone trying to suss out what has been revealed and what's going to be aired, and trying to do a little damage control.
Why would they... Wait a second. What was that? I didn't know they were filming then.
Looks like the cameraman was hiding behind the shelves.
Wait, so they were filming all the time, even when we didn't know it?
Oh my God. There is much more secret filming than I expected. But I am fine with it. I mean it. I am.
Are you kidding me? It's like half the show is secret footage.
I am a very private person. I show them when I want to show them. Who wants a taste?
Oh, yes! Come on!
Oh, my God. Do they film us at night when we're sleeping?
Yes, Erin. They film us at night while we're sleeping because that makes great TV.
Hey,
Oscar.
I'm sorry, sweetie. This whole thing is just freaking me out.
And we learn also that there's like more than one promo, some are in other languages. And so kind of throughout the episode, we get a more full picture of all the things that were filmed. And Pam in particular looks at these promos with some nostalgia. At the beginning of the episode, she and Jim have a phone call and it's really awkward, right? They're out of sync, and she's like learning about what he's doing through his assistant, not from him directly. And they're just not in a good place. And she looks at this and she sees, you know, them on the roof and dancing with the iPod, you know, outside the building, and all these moments that a lot of us as fans of the show love too. And we see her kind of looking wistfully at them, and she's kind of throughout this episode kind of struggling with that, kind of figure out where to put those feelings and how to approach this. There's a great moment where she talks to Stanley about it, and he says, "We've all changed," as he's eating a pretzel doing a crossword puzzle. Like, Stanley hasn't changed at all. But she's got this conflict because she feels like what she had with Jim is fading.
I really like how they do this in this episode, because as we see all of our beloved characters watching themselves as we have been watching them, it's like they're reacting exactly the way any of us would react, or some of us actually have reacted to when we are, you know, something public goes on the internet and other people are seeing it. It's very exciting. It's also a little, you know, nerve-wracking. And I like that we have a moment in the office where we see everyone kind of like rewatching the clips that they're in. So it's not just Pam, like you expressed, but it's everyone else. They're kind of like going through, and especially Andy. He gets caught in a very common internet trap of the comment section.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole little story arc throughout this episode is he is just absolutely obsessed with the comments. First, they're positive. And so he's getting, you know, those great little hits of endorphins of like, oh, look, some total stranger likes something I did. And it's very exciting. And he's getting into it. And then the haters come and he can't handle it. As we know, Andy has anger management problems. He has difficulty dealing with his emotions. And so he is kind of losing his mind as he is spending his entire day just waiting for comments to happen, responding to comments in like all of the, for those of us who are on the internet, we know, like, just don't say anything, say nothing, walk away, don't even read these things, like, just move on. Andy's doing none of that. He is 100% invested in these comments, and it totally trashes his day.
Oh, 7 new comments. The guy at 019 is hot. Hi, Bong Ripper. It's me, Andy, the guy from 019. I'm glad that you enjoyed my work in that promo. I really enjoyed your comment. Going to read some more comments now. Have a great day. He's not hot. He's gay. Dear Jason, it's me, Andy. Nice name, not. Guess what? I'm not gay. So you're an idiot. And I am hot, according to people on this site who have a brain. Never comment on this page ever again. is hot. See, thank you. That's more like it. He is butt. Ah, damn it! I'm about to lose my freaking mind! Screw you, Texas Poontappa!
I love the screen names. They're so funny to me. It's a really great bit because I feel, I don't know, I see myself, not that I've ever like lost it the way Andy does reading the comments, but if anyone has ever posted anything on the internet and gotten comments from random strangers, you can totally see yourself in Andy.
Oh yeah, he's just in this cycle. And there's a repeating of a line from an earlier season where he says, you know, I'm losing my freaking mind. He's falling apart here. And I love the reveal at the end of the episode that some of these commenters, or at least one of them, is actually Nelly, who's just screwing with Andy and doing a very good job of it. Her toying with him is extremely effective.
I love that the one name that she is, she's the Texas Poontappa.
Yeah.
Blah. It's such a good name. It's so bad. She really nailed it with like the perfect internet troll name. So good. So the rest of the crew, though, as they are discovering a lot of this secret footage, they decide to have a meeting down in the warehouse, and they all try and get away from the cameras, and they say they're going to go for a walk, and they meet back in the shelves in the warehouse. They turn off their mics and they are reeling about this footage, about what did they possibly catch. We find out that Stanley is having a third affair, or maybe a second affair. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of affairs going on.
Yeah, there's someone that no one else knows about. And people are like, oh boy.
Yeah, we didn't know about that one either. So he accidentally reveals that. We find out that Nelly attempted to be the villain, which I thought was really funny. And her crime was sneezing into the candy bowl. She thought she'd get more screen time being the villain. So I thought that was really funny.
Okay, everyone turn off your mics.
We need to know more. Did those shots have sound? What exactly did they get on tape?
I sneezed into my hands without using Purell and then dipped into the candy jar. Did they film that?
My first week here, I sneezed directly into the candy jar because I thought I'd get more screen time as a villain.
Okay. Pam, why don't you visit your buddy, the crew guy that got fired, find out what they got?
Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I could.
Hurry, Pam. I need to know how much hellfire is going to rain down on me.
I thought Terry knew about Cynthia.
She does, but neither of them know about Lydia.
Oh, wow.
So everyone is just kind of trying to figure out, like, who can they talk to try and maybe mitigate some of this damage. They elect Pam to go talk to Brian because they know that Brian got fired, that Pam is friendly with him, and that he might have some information about what's been going on. So she is now tasked with going to see Brian to ask them just how much footage they actually got.
Yeah, this is a hard, awkward meeting between the two of them. She comes in and, you know, he does the thing everyone does, like, oh, my place isn't normally this messy, but yes, it is. And they go outside. I noticed that she's, you know, she compliments his view from the terrace. And I don't know if this is a intentional reference or not, but I thought about a long time ago when Pam was like, I would like a house with a terrace, but they don't have houses like that in Scranton. Like, that popped in my mind.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. I could be reading into it. Definitely could be reading into it.
No, that's fine. That's what this show is for. People listen to us to read into it.
It's a real, like, they're having two conversations is kind of the feeling I get. And so she's talking about the documentary and trying to understand, like, how do you have all this footage? How do the audio work? But in the middle of this, she's like, do you think Jim has changed? He's really into his work. I feel like there's this distance. And Brian basically backs her point of view up. It's like, yeah, you're not crazy. Like, I think you're right. And then they switch back to the conversation about the documentary, and Pam gets upset and leaves. But I think Pam being upset and leaving is about both things. Like, I feel like when Brian says, yeah, we could pick you up from 100 yards away. We have all these fancy microphones, like we can hear you. And her response is, we had no privacy for 10 years. And then she leaves. Like, she's also, I think, upset that he verified or acknowledged her feelings in a way. It feels like a very layered conversation to me.
Do you think Jim's changed? I'm sorry. That was out of the blue. I just mean because you know us and you've, like, observed us for 10 years. And I feel like he's so into his work right now, and no, I don't know. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy.
Well, I wish that made me feel better. Listen, so everybody saw the promos, and they're kind of freaking out. Because it seems like you got a lot of private stuff on camera.
Yeah.
You know, stuff people didn't intend for everyone to see, and they kind of want to know how much.
They want to know how much what?
How much stuff you got.
Pretty much everything.
Well, yeah, but what if we turn off our mic packs?
They've got parabolic mics. They can pick you up 100 yards away. So, no, if you were around there, they got you.
So we basically had no privacy for 10 years.
That's not really true. I mean, that's...
I gotta go.
Oh, no, hang on a second. Pam, I'm sorry. I can explain this so much better.
Think you explained it.
So I wanted to ask you about this, because I mean, I know a little bit about microphones, living in a house with an audiophile type person, but he mentions that they can pick up sound from like 100 yards away or whatever the distance was with a parabolic mic. And while this whole conversation is going on, we see that, you know, they don't have mic packs on, and that all of this is being filmed from a distance, from out on the balcony. So like they're filming through Brian's apartment. They're picking up their audio and everything. Does this mic exist, or is this kind of like a, you know, cop show, like enhanced moment?
Oh, I don't know. I was not expecting to play sound guy on the show today.
Well, because like, so in a lot of shows, sometimes there's like one line of dialogue to explain something. Because a lot of times in this show, we're like, well, how are they picking up the audio if they're not wearing mic packs or they're not doing this? Like, how could that possibly happen? And Brian offers kind of this one little blanket statement to explain away how we can get the sound for all of these, like, this like secret taping, right? And I was just curious if it was true or not.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia article, and it seems like it depends on how big. So there's like a dish around the microphone to like help focus the sound. I guess it depends on how big that is. But in the photo, there's a dude standing on a football field, which is 100 yards in length. So I'm going to say that Brian's correct.
All right. So, yeah. So there we go. The one line of dialogue fixes all of our suspicions on how they got all that secret footage audio. So here we go.
There you go.
It makes sense. Checks out.
Yeah. But am I reading too much into like the layeredness of this conversation?
No, I think it was very telling. Like, I like that Pam went over there with one intention to kind of talk to Brian and figure out what the filming situation was, you know, as tasked from her coworkers. But really, she ended up having a much more personal conversation with him. And it seems like she had that thought in the back of her head. As you said, she's been, you know, watching all this old footage and kind of internalizing a lot of it throughout the day. And then finally, she has a point of reference where she can ask this question to someone who's also been there and who has also seen the changes in Jim. And she just can't help herself but to ask this. And I think it's also kind of an awkward moment because she knows that Brian has had feelings for her. And here she is kind of coming to his house, and the idea that nothing has been private. And now all of a sudden she's having this private conversation with Brian. And I think she also kind of panics that, like, if I haven't had privacy for the past 10 years, do I even have privacy right now in asking this? And so I think that it's all like, it's all festering up in Pam, and that, like, you know, there's a lot of layers here. And I think that you're absolutely right to read into it, because this is a complicated situation.
I think she feels a little exposed, right? Like, having no privacy in 10 years, like, yes, it's also about the public and like this is all going to be aired, but also it's like maybe she has a realization, like, she's had sort of an intimate relationship with Brian without really realizing that it was so intimate, right? And she feels knocked off center by that. I think it's an understandable, a very understandable response to that. I mean, I think anyone would feel freaked out in that situation.
So I think this might be the last time we see Brian.
I think it is.
Possibly. Yep. So I like that they used his character in this way, though, that they still like didn't just drop him off the face of the earth from the Valentine's Day episode where he said that he was, you know, breaking up with his significant other. But, you know, now we have this other extra edition of the Brian moment, and it helps move along Pam's feelings that are, you know, what the heck is going on with her and Jim. And in addition to all that, though, at the end of this episode, Pam gets nostalgic about a lot of the stuff in a more verbal way in her confessional to the camera, because she's saying that she wants a tape of, you know, or a CD or a recording of some of these moments, that she wishes she could have that.
I hope you got sound on everything. I'd love a DVD of that.
I thought that that was kind of coming from a different perspective. Like, she stormed out of Brian's apartment, and then she's having like this more romantic confessional about the tapes, about like her feelings with Jim. So I was just a little confused by that, but wondering what you thought.
Yeah, I agree with you that it felt a little bit strange, a little bit sort of offbeat for the rest of her storyline. But maybe she realized, you know, what she has is worth fighting for with Jim. But also, and I can't kind of shake this feeling, like, maybe she also thinks, well, where we are now is just where we're going to be. And she wants to kind of like hold on to what is in the past and maybe afraid she can't get it back. I read it as kind of sad, like coming from a place of sadness. I don't know. It's definitely, I think maybe even meant to be kind of open to interpretation.
Yeah. So we leave Pam in kind of a weird place at the end of this episode. We have seen her being very romantic in the early days of her with Jim. I mean, I think about that too. I was like, wow, imagine if like you had that, you know, you had a recording of like your early romances. Like, that'd be so awesome to like look back on. It would be just, I mean, more than just memories, right? Like, you actually get to see them. And so like, we're leaving the two of them. They only had that really awkward conversation in the beginning of the episode, and they don't reconnect in the end of the episode. It's more just Pam on her own and Jim on his own, being stuck reading a really bad screenplay. like, so I guess we, you know, we're going to have to wait to find out what happens with these two. But
yeah,
there are another two that are also doing some damage control, and that's Angela and Oscar, because now they realize that their little thruple, I mean, I guess they're not actually a thruple because they're not all together, but still. Well, it's a thing. Don't judge. People have different lives.
Okay.
But so their situation is about to be revealed, and that could be kind of bad for the senator.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to be damaging to his career. And they, after they have this kind of argument in the stairwell where they're like playing music to help drown out their microphones, which I think is funny. And Angela just keeps hitting Oscar over and over. they decide to call him together, and they go to his voicemail.
You've reached Senator Robert Lipton. Please leave a message.
Hi, honey.
Hey, Robert.
It's Angela and Oscar.
Hey.
Just a few quick things.
The documentary is going to be airing soon, and you look great in the promos.
Oh, you look so handsome. Very presidential.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, I get the sense you're going to be outed as gay.
Yes, and I cheated on you with Dwight. It looks like they got it on film. I didn't tell you about it.
I think that's it.
I think we're good.
Done.
Bye.
Okay.
Love you.
Can you imagine getting that voicemail? It would be no good.
I love this message. I love that they fight over, like, neither of them wants to tell him bad news.
Yeah.
But they end up doing it together. And yeah, this voicemail is just an absolute disaster, but it's kind of the best disaster. I love it. I love watching it. It's so good.
Yeah, and it's all true, right? Like, I mean, they are, in a way, kind of coming clean for the first time, you know, as the three of them. Like, this is what's been going on, as opposed to, especially Angela, who would rather just ignore things or, you know, downplay their importance like she does with Esther in The Office. But she kind of comes out and says, hey, this is what's been going on. And, you know, now they have to deal with the fallout.
We should talk about Esther and Dwight and Angela. So this part of the episode, we have Esther coming into the office to visit Dwight. And Angela is kind of thrilled about this because she overhears when Dwight is asking Clark for some advice about his, you know, new lady friend. And Angela hearing the name Esther and that she's like a farmer, that she's assuming she will be seen as the shining star to this total hillbilly disaster that she's expecting Esther to be.
Dwight is dating a Brussels sprout farmer named Esther. She's coming here this afternoon with her father. Who knows? Maybe she'll be pulling the horse cart.
And we all know that Esther's gorgeous and that Angela's being a little petty here. And she can't wait to watch the disaster. And it turns out when Esther shows up, she's a hottie.
Yeah.
And Angela feels real jealous.
Yeah. And I think Angela's put off even further that, like, she's kind of a younger version of Angela, right? Like, she's blonde and beautiful, and Angela feels threatened by that. And I think, you know, she, I love the, in the kitchen where, like, she's, like, making the joke about, like, yeah, maybe she'll eat it out of your hand. Like, Angela's being so nasty, and then, like, totally taken aback when Esther comes in. I like that quick turnaround for Angela.
And then this whole, you know, everyone coming into the office to see Dwight's office, which I guess it makes sense because if, you know, you're getting to know someone and their family and the way this courtship is going, it's kind of a little bit more traditional that, you know, her and her sisters and her dad would come and see where Dwight works. Like, I get why they're there, even though obviously it's a plot device to get them into the office and all of that. But still, I get it. And the episode kind of takes a turn where they are now buying a tractor together that apparently it was revealed as Dwight and Clark are kind of bonding over this, you know, relationship advice. And Clark is very interested now after seeing Esther's also hot sisters that he is flirting with them. But that there was a conversation about how, you know, Dwight and Esther's father should go in halvesies on leasing a new tractor.
Clark, I need your advice. I'm having some lady troubles.
What's her name?
Esther Bruger.
Sweet.
Lives on the neighboring farm, 85 acres.
Oh, yeah. Keep talking.
Well, we've been out three times. There has been physicality. The thing is, we were hanging out with her father the other night looking at a farm catalog. Next thing I know, he wants to lease a tractor with me.
Ugh.
What do you think?
The same thing that you think.
A long-term tractor leases can put pressure on a relationship.
God, a lot of my buddies are going through the same thing right now. Something in the air.
Clark discovers, while flirting with the sisters, and they try and get him to buy an auger with them.
We should buy an auger together.
Oh, yeah, we should do that.
You would be a great one to buy an auger with.
That this might be a scam. That this farmer comes over with his beautiful daughters and all of a sudden trying to get Dwight into this business deal about a tractor, it does seem a little bit strange.
Yeah. And Clark pulls Dwight aside, which I like. I like that Clark's like, hey, Dwight, like, we're getting conned here. These girls, I love the line, these girls are way too hot to be into us. That made me laugh.
Dude, we're being conned.
Go on.
These chicks are way too hot to be into us. Esther's just pretending to like you so that you'll buy her daddy a new tractor.
No.
Yeah, the sister's trying to seduce me into buying an auger with her.
What? Has the warranty expired on the auger you have now?
I don't even know what an auger is.
No woman would ever want a man who doesn't know what an auger is.
You know, Dwight listens and kind of realizes that, oh yeah, Clark is right. There's something fishy about this. And it's a nice conversation between the two of them because we've seen Dwight and Clark like over and over, like work together, but then also like work against each other. So I like their relationship unfolding. But Esther comes in and kind of crashes the conversation, and she tells the truth. Like, look, you know, we're supposed to be splitting this tracker 50-50, but my dad behind your back is going to lease it to other people on the weekends. And, you know, you're going to be on the hook for paying more than your fair share for this. And Dwight is sort of taken aback, and Esther's like, yeah, I'm not tractor bait. Like, I'm, you know, I think it's nice that she sort of steps in and tells the truth to Dwight. Although I am very confused by the end of the episode, which we'll get to in a second, I guess, but how this ends. I also like that they both make fun of Clark for not knowing what an auger is. That cracked me up.
I'm sure you know exactly what an auger is, country boy.
I do know what an auger is for, yeah.
So you're fine with me not leasing the tractor?
I mean, our courtship can proceed?
Of course. No. You didn't think it was just tractor bait, did you?
No.
Hey, Dwight, what's an auger used for?
Post-hole digging.
I like that we don't have anything nefarious going on here. I like that Esther is kind of just a farmer's daughter, and she is just kind of hot, and she is into Dwight and he's into her. Like, I like that it didn't go any deeper than that, you know, like that he wasn't actually getting the wool pulled over his, or the beets pulled over his eyes. I don't know. Oh,
yeah.
No, she's a,
the beet wool.
She's a, what kind of farmer is she? Brussels sprout? The Brussels sprouts pulled over his eyes. Yeah. And so I like that. It's still like a pretty true courtship here, even though her dad was trying to weasel a little bit more out of Dwight than originally expected. But it doesn't come to like a really aggressive situation. And also with Clark and the Dwight relationship, Clark is definitely a yes man, and we're seeing that more and more. But he's kind of the best kind, where he is doing it to be friendly in the office. It's definitely not super genuine, but he's not doing it in any kind of a mean way, which makes me really enjoy the Clark character and his dynamic when it comes to, you know, going along with a lot of Dwight's strange schemes or requests, that he's just like, yes, I'm here for this. But it's completely fake, but not in a mean kind of vindictive way. It's just kind of, I'm just going to get along with people in the office and kind of be a little sarcastic about it, but that's okay. And I like that they built the Clark character into that.
Yeah, he's a yes man for Dwight until he realizes the truth of what's going on. And then he sort of comes out of that. It's like, hey, buddy, like, I need to talk to you. I'm capping your pen so you can't sign this, which is very funny. It is... Yeah, I like this episode, or I like the storyline a lot. And I think it is helpful that it comes right after the farm, that you kind of, that's not sort of left hanging as its own thing. Because we talked about this last week of like, that storyline felt very disconnected from the rest of the episode. And we know it was a backdoor pilot, blah, blah, blah. But then they tie it back right into this episode. And I'm glad that happened. So like, the farm storyline just isn't out there hanging around us with us kind of wondering what's going on.
Yeah, I completely agree with you that we at least get to see some of these characters again, and they are actually played by the same people, which is good. Sometimes with that kind of thing, they'll like sub in people real quick last minute, but they don't do that. So I'm glad. Yeah, so that kind of leaves us to like that last little tiny silly plot of is he a baseball player?
Yes.
I don't know. Yes. Sports. Ryan Howard, yep. Also the same name as Ryan Howard. And he comes in to athlete to, I don't know, start the, what do they do? Sports marketing?
Marketing. He's looking for a career after baseball. And in his mind, the way to that is, oh, I wrote this movie script. And this movie has big threat level midnight energy. Like, it is nuts.
Together we will win this baseball game against the evil space Yankees. Eat fresh.
That'll pay for the exploding helicopter.
Smart.
Suddenly, the evil thugs break into the stadium. The big piece hits baseballs at the evil thugs.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Come on, man. Sell it.
Yeah, Joe.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Yeah, that's better. A bunch of hot women go, oh, yeah.
Megan, I was too shy to tell you this when I was just a normal professional baseball player, but I love you.
They kiss. It is super emotional, like in Toy Story.
Wow. I'll tell you what, it's really strong. Can't wait to read the rest of it later, see how it ends.
It's so strong.
Keep reading, then.
They listen to this ridiculous script. They definitely placate this baseball player again. I can't remember. I can't keep the
baseball.
I can't keep the balls in my head.
Probably should leave a voicemail for somebody about that.
So they definitely they go along with this ridiculous thing. They say they're gonna try and get Darth Vader for them. It's kind of like a silly little side plot line. It felt like filler to me. I didn't super enjoy it, but I guess, like I said, it's there to kind of have us keep track of what Daryl and Jim might be mm-hmm. doing over there in Philly.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And you know, maybe it is also there to help like draw contrast between like Pam, what Pam's going through and what Jim's going through, and he's unaware of like another kind of heavy emotional day for Pam, and he's in this meeting about this dumb movie. Like, I think the contrast there is important because it shows they aren't really on the same page, right? That there are these there's this ground between them that they haven't been able to make up.
And I also noticed that when Jim hangs up the phone with Pam in the beginning after their phone call, that neither of them say "I love you."
Yeah,
you know, when they say goodbye on the phone. So that really stood out to me. So I think that brings us mostly to the end of this episode, and it covers it. We have the promo out there. We have Andy losing his mind over all the comments, and we have a lot of big reveals happening for a lot of our characters because of all of this secret footage.
Yeah, my only real question about the end is we see Dwight driving away in the tractor with like Esther on his arm. Like, did he go through with the deal? Did he just buy it on his own? Did I miss something?
Wait, that's your only question about that ending? I thought at least you were going to bring up like he's putting some serious mileage on this tractor to drive it home.
Oh yeah,
that's
also,
what I was
not,
upset about.
Yeah, you should not drive a tractor on that sort of thing. But
it's like, unless you absolutely have to, tractors are for field mileage.
Yeah.
Not street mileage.
You got a lot of people honking at you, but I guess it worked out somehow.
It seems like they made a better deal and that Dwight and Esther are pleased with the outcome of that. And Dwight's going to drive the new tractor home.
Go Dwight.
With a lot of honking cars behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us to the end. We will be back next time talking about the episode Stairmageddon. And until then, you can go and follow us over at tall_beats over on Twitter, or individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member of The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members only bonus feed, and you can join us in the conference room, our members only Slack. All right, Steven, until then, try and stay out of the comment section. I really don't know if you can handle it.
But they need to know how good I am at the banjo.
That's true. You should definitely post a video of you playing banjo in retaliation for any bad comments. Please. Please do it.
Hey, Texas Poon Tappa and Jason, and all the rest of you haters out there. Check this out.